In this series, we've talked about, you know, naked and unashamed, and it's been kind of different. It's been kind of out there. We talked about naked living. We talked about last week was naked worship, and you know, we've dealt with everything from sin to just being obedient and free in our worship to God and loving Him and adoring Him in this naked and unashamed way. The key verse for this whole series comes out of the book of Genesis in chapter 2. And it's very simply, and it says this: the man and his wife were both naked, that's Adam and Eve, and they felt no shame. And my thought for this series came very simply from the whole thing that Adam and Eve were never any more closer to God, never any more closer to God than when they were in this garden, naked and unashamed. It was before shame actually entered into the world. And the definition of shame, as the dictionary puts it, is a painful emotion caused by a strong sense of guilt, embarrassment, unworthiness, or disgrace that brings about dishonor, disappointment, and or condemnation. Okay, so, I mean, and shame can affect anything. You know, definitely, you know, we talk about sin because the choice that Adam and Eve made in that garden that day to pick up that fruit and eat that apple when God said, you know, you can do whatever you want, go wherever you want, get any fruit from any tree, but don't get it from this tree right here. And what do? Boom. Just like telling a kid, you can do anything that you want to, but don't do this. What's a kid going to do? They're going to go do it. I was a kid, you know, and it may take them a while. You know, they may inch their pinky toe, you know. Just like going in the deep end. You know, you tell your kid they can't swim, you can't go over there. Why not? It looks fun. They're going off the diving board. It looks real good. It's big, deep water. It's blue. It looks really fun. You can't go over there. And they just inch their way, and they inch their way. And you know, I've seen it happen. The kids jump in, and they can't swim. And you know, and they realize that probably what you were telling them was the truth. They learn it the hard way, but it is. Okay? God kind of speaks the same thing to us. When he tells us and he speaks to us reality and he says, you know, don't do this. You know, I'm not doing this to be mean. It's just this is what's best for you. Don't do this, okay? And so you just kind of inch your way towards it. And the moment that you do it, it's like you jumped in the deep end and you've forgotten how to swim. And it's just like, oh, I wished I would have listened. But that sinful choice brought shame into the world. And that shame that comes with it, you know, was affected, of course, and brought into this world by sin. But it goes in so many different areas of our life we talk about. And like I said, we talked about our life and living, you know, that shameless life and shameless worship last week. Not being concerned about who's around us. Not being concerned about, you know, all this other stuff. We talked about how the outside affects the inside and the inside affects the output and you know, what we put into our life. Listen, if it's not of God, it's not going to come out that, you know, in the right way. And so, you know, this morning we're going to continue with this and I'm really liking this series and really liking where God's taken me as an individual through my study time. And so this morning we're going to talk about naked thoughts. And immediately you started thinking. Just being honest. Immediately when I said that, you started thinking. So I've got to go back to my disclaimer, okay? I've said it every week. You have got to promise me that you're going to do everything that you can not to think physically but spiritually, okay? You can't because that word prompts, it is, forget that. You have got to right now, okay, right now, get the physical thought out of your mind. There you're thinking again, so am I. And start thinking spiritually. Okay, spiritually. And I want you to know that the basis, this was an addition. This was not in my lineup in this series. And I'm just going to be a couple of weeks ago. Remember the index card confessions? And I'm not going to stand up here, you know, and I told you what I'd do, and that's what I've done. I've read them, and I'm continuing to pray for you. And I hope you're continuing to pray for me. And so, but in this, I really got to noticing that one of the biggest issues of struggle, and it's mine too, comes from our thoughts. And so when I started praying about this, I thought, you know what, God, maybe this is something you can teach me, and maybe this is something that we can learn together and really, you know, dive into to this whole concept and this whole way of thinking, you know, because this is tough. And I'm going to say something right now this morning. This will be a tough message. And not necessarily that I'm going to preach it tough or I'm going to preach it hard, But anytime we start talking about self-reflection, anytime we start talking about looking inside of our own life and the things that we do, and specifically today, our thoughts, it's tough. Because a lot of times when we open the door to the inside of our life, especially the inside of our mind, we don't like what we see. And so, you know, today, it's just going to be one of those tough things. So prepare yourself right now. But just because it's tough, don't shut me out. Don't shut out what God wants to speak to you today, because a lot of the times, the toughest things are the things that help us grow the most and really conquer some things that we're dealing with. I want to read a scripture to you, and I'm going to read it. I'm just going to read it just really quickly. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, and it's verse 4 and 5, and it says this: "The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up." I want you to grab a hold of that, okay? And I'm going to, when I'm done with this, you'll understand this just a little bit more. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and take captive, every thought to make it obedient to Christ. We think about everything. Our minds are constantly thinking. And it's just, my mind has been just this crazy. It's just nuts. And sometimes this morning, because of my thoughts, I've laughed. I've had some smile moments. I've even shed a few tears this morning because of my thoughts. But when we sit here and we think about, you know, thinking, and we think about all of this, you know, the stuff that goes into our mind, you know, it's like a super highway. It really is. And sometimes we're traveling back and forth from road to road. Sometimes it's pretty smooth. Sometimes the transitions are just really easy to get through, and the signs are really clearly marked. And then sometimes it's like driving in Dallas, Texas. I love Dallas. But there's one particular interchange when you're coming in, it's just hard to get from point A to point B, and you're looking at all these signs and all these roads, or at least I do, and I know where I'm going when I get there, but when I get there, it's just like, ah! Ever have those moments in your life? I mean, seriously. Sometimes, you know, in our mind, it's just like we're stuck on the same highway for a long time. It's like driving through Kansas. I heard that, amen. Nothing against Kansas. By the way, I'm a Missouri Tiger fan, but nothing against Kansas, but it's a long, flat, boring drive, right? And sometimes in our thoughts, in our mind, it's just like we're stuck on that same road all the time, and we get stuck there, and it ends up taking us nowhere good. I've had a definition for you every single week, and this week is no different. I want to define thought really quick for you. A thought is the act of deliberation, meditation, or reflection of a concept, opinion, or an idea. Okay, it's the act of. I mean, it's something we actually do. So, thoughts. All of you right now at this moment are having thoughts. Every single one of you, myself included, are having thoughts in your mind. Some of you this morning, maybe you're having thoughts, you know, they're stuck in your head. You're having a hard time maybe with life right now, and maybe that's what you're thinking about. Maybe you're thinking about what I'm saying. Maybe you're thinking about what's for lunch today. You know, maybe you're thinking about who's playing football. You know, and that's going on, and you're wishing that I would hurry up and preach faster so you could get home before the 12 o'clock kickoff. And I mean, I'm just being serious. I mean, it might be going on. I don't know. Maybe, you know, that's just some of how you're thinking. But some of you right now, you're stuck in them. Some of you right now are stuck in the thoughts that are going on in your mind, and you're having a hard time living a life that you want to live. Ultimately, you're having a hard time living a life that God wants you to live. They could be selfish thoughts, they could be prideful thoughts, they could be lustful thoughts, just negative thoughts in general. Thoughts that ultimately cause shame. For some of you, it's like your mind is a war zone. And it's just a battle every single moment of every single day. And you know the thoughts that you want to think, but they're being attacked by the thoughts that you don't want to think, and it's just like these huge bombs are going on. And so this morning, it's really important that we begin to this. Now, I want you to know something really quick. I know we're human. I know I'm human. I know this is hard. It's hard for me to live it every day. It's hard for me sometimes to make it through 30 minutes of a day without my thoughts directing my life. And I want you to know that your thoughts do direct your life. The Bible even speaks about it. I share a part of a verse in Proverbs chapter 23, and it's in verse 7, and it says this, "For as he thinks in his heart, so is he." For as he thinks in his heart, we say, wait a minute, Pastor Ron, you don't think with your heart. Well, let me just throw out a concept to you really quickly. If what gets from your mind gets to your heart, it becomes who you are. If what, and I don't care if it's good or bad. If you start thinking about Jesus Christ and these thoughts of Jesus are going on in your mind and you decide to make the decision to take Jesus from your mind to your heart and ask him to live there, it will change your life. It will. Let's take some other things, other thoughts that aren't so good. Let's take lustful thoughts, for instance. Those are pretty tough. You take lustful thoughts that are in your mind. Now, I just want you to know something. Everyone's human, and they cross everybody's mind. But what you do with them, it will be dependent on what happens from that point. You got me? The problem is when you start dwelling on them and revisiting them. But if they're in your mind, if they dwell right here long enough, they'll get here. And don't think for a second that once they're here, it won't affect your life. Because it will. For as a man thinks in his heart, so is he, or so he is. And for us to live life like God wants us to live, then we have to get a grip on our thought life. We have to begin to really, you know, grab a hold of what's going on here in our mind. And it begins with a desire to be better today than you were yesterday. We say, well, I blew it yesterday. I don't care what you did yesterday because you can't fix yesterday. But you can begin to fix or change what occurs from this point in time forward. But sometimes our thoughts get stuck on yesterday. And listen, you can't change it. There's nothing you can do to change yesterday. It's history. Okay? It's history. So we got to grab a hold of this, okay? And you know, maybe some of you are saying, well, PR, I want my thoughts to get better. Well, I got a very bold, blunt, and just honest question to ask you. Do you? Because it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to believe it and then to act on it. Because sometimes I think, you know, listen, sometimes I think, I'm thinking sometimes we get used to our negative thoughts. We get so used to them that we become okay with it. We get so used to it, we become okay with it. And then this is just how I am and what I think, and so, oh well. This is just how it's going to be. Or we're thinking even if it's negative and we know it, and this is especially true of selfish thoughts. Remember last week or a couple weeks ago, I told you that my struggle was with selfishness? This is especially true with selfish thoughts. It's just like you just have them so often, and it just becomes this struggle that you're just like, well, that's just who I am. No, because if it's not of God, then that's not who you were created to be. That is something that we have added. But according to Proverbs 23:7, our life becomes a product of our thought. Because grab this, eventually, if what we're thinking stays in our mind, once again, moves to our heart, it becomes who we are. Good, bad, positive, negative, it doesn't matter. And when this comes to our relationship with God and how we live for Him, it's everything. I want to read a couple of scriptures that kind of show this just really quick. And this is Jesus out of the book of Mark in chapter 11, verses 23 and 24. It says this, "Truly I tell you," and this is Jesus talking, "if you say to this mountain, go, throw yourself into the sea, and do not doubt in your heart, but believe that what you say will happen, it will be done." And he goes on to say, "Therefore, I tell you, whatever you ask in prayer, believe that you have received it, and it will be yours." Now, let's get real here for just a second. Jesus stands there and says, if you speak to this mountain, if you speak to this thing that's right here in front of you, and you say to it, mountain, throw yourself in the sea, the realist inside of us, the human inside of us says, that's impossible. Now, I know God can do it, because we read about him doing it, and I know God does some big, huge things. And I've read it in his book, I've seen it in people's lives, and I know it, but speak to a mountain and throw it into a sea. And the moment I just want, there's a little word that affects all of our thoughts all of the time, and it's called doubt. It's called doubt. It's one thing to think it, but it's another to believe it and put it into action. And without the right thinking, there's no way that we can manifest. Listen to this. There's no way that we can manifest or bring about, okay, the powers of God. You say moving a mountain. That's pretty powerful. And I promise you today, and you may think that I'm crazy, but listen to me. If God wanted to move a mountain today, he'll find a way to move it. He'll move it. But what Jesus is saying is you've got to believe that he can. It's in our thoughts. Today I want to share a story. And this is another story. This is another reason I really like this series is because God's really took me to some pretty cool stories and allowed me to preach through them. And it's pretty neat. I want to take you to a story out of the book of Numbers. And I want to show you how our thoughts can affect our lives and how our thoughts either propel us into the life that God wants us to have or ultimately keeps us from it. And so, our thoughts can not only affect our lives, but potentially can affect other people's lives. And I'm going to show you that in this story as well today. So, in the book of Numbers, chapter 13, and I'm going to read the first two verses for you really quickly because there's significance in these very simple first two verses. And it says this, "The Lord said to Moses," in verse 2, "send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Israelites." Send some men to explore the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the Canaanites. And so just grab this really quickly. He wanted Moses to send the men to a place that he was going to give them. This was before any of this other stuff happened. God said to Moses, send some men to this place that I am going to give them. It's not if they go, I'll give it to them. It's not whatever happens and they face it and then I'll give it to them. He said, which I am going to give them. That's significance for the rest of this morning. Significance. So you stay with this. Remember that thought. So Moses picks the leaders from each of the tribes and he sends them to Canaan. Sends them on this journey, and he directs them to check things out, what kind of people there are, you know, how big are they, how small are they, how strong are they, how weak are they, how many of them are, what's the land like, is it good or bad, will it be good for raising crops, will it be bad for raising crops, what's the towns like, how is the soil, and bring me back some fruit. I thought that was kind of funny. God tells Moses to go do all this stuff, and then Moses says, and bring me back some fruit. And so they go and they check it out and they come back with this report. By the way, they do bring him back some fruit. But I want to read this to you and just kind of we're going to hit pieces of this story. And we're going to start in verse 26. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community of Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly, and they showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. Okay, this account is coming from the spokesman or probably the loudest speakers of this group of 12 men that he sent. Here's the account. "We went into the land which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey." Otherwise, it's pretty awesome. Okay, here is its fruit. "But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites live in the hill country, and the Canaanites live near the sea along the Jordan." Then Caleb, you say, well, who's Caleb? Caleb is one of the 12 that went on this journey. "Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it." Verse 31, "But the men who had gone up with him said, we can't attack those people. They're stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they explored. And they said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size." Verse 33, we saw the Nephilim there. That's the descendants of the Anak. "And we seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them." So basically, they went on this journey, and the land was awesome. It was as great as it was supposed to be, okay? And they go there, and they see all this stuff. And this morning, from this story right here, I want to talk about three things that happen when we're taken captive by our thoughts. When we are actually taken captive by our thoughts. Remember in 2 Corinthians it says for us to take our thoughts captive. Well, I want to talk to you this morning about three things that happen, that I believe happen, that shows me in this story about what happens when actually our thoughts take us captive. Number one, and maybe one of the biggest, if not the biggest, we doubt God. When we allow our thoughts to take us captive, we begin to doubt God and to doubt His word and what He speaks into our life. Okay, because if you go back to verse 2 and it says, you know, go send the men to the land that I am giving them. Okay, and you got to grab that thought. God had already spoke this. It was already done, but because they had not taken their thoughts captive, doubt crept into their minds and it actually had won. And going through this, God told us to do this and He said He was going to move this mountain, but the mountain looks so big. And this is what I believe sometimes happens when our doubts, when we start to be, you know, captivated by our thoughts, we'll tell people how big God can be in their life, but we make Him small in our own. It's easy to tell somebody else how big God can be. It's easy to tell somebody else that God will move that mountain if you'll just ask Him. But when it's our mountain standing in front of our life, it becomes a whole different story for us to ask Him to do. We make God small. And it's because of our thoughts. I know these lustful thoughts I'm having are wrong, and I know God can deliver me from them and provide me a way out. But the thoughts are just too strong, and the way out is just too hard. I mean, you could put anything. Go back, you know, to what I shared earlier. Without the right thinking, there's no way to manifest or bring about the true power of God that He wants to bring into your life. And the moment we allow the negative thoughts to captivate us is the moment that we'll begin to doubt God at His word and what He says. Because God had spoke that land to them already. And they'd already seen some of that. I mean, come on, people. They'd watched God just part a sea. How does it get any more amazing than that? And how can there be any more proof that there is a God than standing at this massive, huge body of water with every enemy that you have crashing down the hill towards you, and God just splits it open? They had lived that. And God says, go to the land that I am giving you, but they go with their thoughts already taken captive, and they begin to doubt God. Number two, when our thoughts take us captive really quick, we begin to doubt others. And you say, well, Pastor Ron, what's the significance of that? There's a huge significance in that. Because I believe this, when we begin to struggle in our life with our thoughts and all these different things that go on in our life, I believe in such a huge way that God puts people in our life to help us. I believe that. I just do. You read it in the Bible. You read stories in the Bible where God, you know, sends certain people to certain places, and they may not understand why they're going or what they're doing, but they show up in the right place to help somebody that they didn't even know that they were going to meet. And I've seen it happen in my life. People have been in the right place to help me, and I've been in the right place to try to help other people. But when our thoughts become captive, when the doubt creeps in, we begin to doubt others. Go back to verse 30 really quickly because, you know, here's these Israelites and they come in and they go and they see this land and it's beautiful and it's wonderful, but then they start talking about how big the people are and you know, just they start creeping the doubt into the conversation. But Caleb, remember, Caleb was one of those 12 spies and he speaks up in verse 30 and he says this, we should go up and take possession of the land for we can certainly do it. We can certainly do it. After what God had spoke to Moses, after what Moses had spoke to the people, even after all of that. And then with Caleb, he saw the same thing that these other 10 spies saw. He saw the good land. He saw the giants. He saw the big people. But yet he knew and understood. He had taken his thoughts captive and very simply, boldly, and plainly said, let's do it. We can do it. We can do it. And they said, yeah, that's all good, but we can't. It's not possible. Listen, Caleb was a good leader. He was a godly leader. And all because of the focus on the negative thoughts by the 10 of the 12 guys. There's another one I'll share with you in just a minute. What they thought about the situation not only affected their lives and caused them to doubt, okay, but others, it affected also the lives of most all of the other Israelites. That's why I said earlier that our thoughts, our negative thoughts, when we become, you know, when we allow our thoughts to take us captive, that begins to affect other people. They were grumbling, they were moaning, and we're going to die here. It would be better if we would just go back and be slaves, you know, to the enemies that we just ran from. And the negative thoughts had them doubting everyone. It had them doubting the godly leadership that was there, the spies, their friends, their families. It had them doubting everything. Everything. Because of their thoughts. And I want you to know something today. You have people around you. I have people around me today that genuinely have a compassion for you in your life and that have either tried and or trying. And maybe this is speaking to somebody here specifically this morning that may be struggling with your thoughts in your mind. Somebody may be trying to speak to you. Somebody may be trying to help you and saying, we can certainly do this, but we get stuck in reality. We get stuck with these hard thoughts in our mind that we just can't get past, and we're doubting God, and we begin to doubt what these other people are saying, and maybe God has actually put them in our life to help us, and it just kind of all distorted, and we're back on that super highway down in Dallas, Texas, trying to get from this point to this point by crossing all these other things and not knowing exactly how it's going to happen. And then we end up in this place where we're lost and where we're hurting and where we just don't see any way out of the situation that we're in. And as long as you are the captive of your thoughts, it will only cause chaos in your life and the life of others. And guys, listen, I know. I'm telling you. I know this. I live this. I live this. My mind has been my biggest enemy for years. For years. I've struggled with depressive thoughts. I've struggled with anxious thoughts. I've struggled with selfish thoughts. I've struggled with lustful thoughts. I've struggled with negative thoughts. And it's hard to get past that because those negative thoughts cause doubt. And I know God has been there to help me at times in my life, but I've doubted that. I know people have been there to help me at certain times in my life, but it became too much. This is important. Number three, and this one is right up there. Right up there. Number three, we begin to doubt ourselves. We begin to doubt ourselves. Let me go back and we'll just kind of finish this story out again, just reread. In verse 31, it says, but the men, this is after Caleb had stood up and said, let's do it. But all these other negative thinkers came in and said, but we've gone up, the men who've gone up, and they said, we can't attack those people. They're stronger than we are. First of all, how did they know? Do you realize that our thoughts... I was watching something this week, and you believe this or not, but it was a scientific study, and I'm going to be honest with you, it's kind of funny for me to believe it too. There was a study done with people that work out, that lift weights. And they took this group over here, and they made them think about lifting weights, and then they made them actually do the effort of lifting weights. And then they had this other group in the study over here, that they thought about lifting weights, they thought about getting stronger, they thought about the actual exercises and routines, but they never actually touched a weight. This group over here, after a 2-month study, increased their strength by 30% by lifting. This group over here, without ever touching a weight, increased their strength by 22%. 22%. Now, while that's not as much, they didn't even lift a finger. They just started thinking positively, and their muscles reacted positively. Their body reacted positively. Their life reacted. That's amazing. I sit there. I had to watch it again. I was like, that ain't in no way. No way. But you know what? I sit there, and I think about it. I think, you know, this. We start doubting ourselves. Who told them that they were stronger? Yeah, they might have looked bigger, but who told them? That's like a football team preparing all week to go play somebody that they already know in their mind that they can't beat. So they go on and they say, and they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land that they had explored. And they said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there of great size. We skip on down and it says, we seemed like grasshoppers in whose eyes? Their own eyes. They had made themselves out to be weaker. They had made themselves out to be smaller. It was them that had put that into their mind. And because it was in their mind and they allowed it to get from their mind to the heart, it became who they were. They were smaller, they weren't as strong, and they were like grasshoppers to the size of these giants. If that's what we think, because really, God told him to go check it out. He was giving it to him. It was awesome. They can do it, but they come back and say, we can't do it. We're too small. We're too weak. The mountains are too big to move. And if that's what you think, then that's the way it's going to be. For so as you think, you are. He said, well, Pastor Ron, come on. And you know something? I've heard people say this, and you've heard this too. You can do whatever you put your mind to. There's some truth and honesty in that. There's also some parts of that in that, if you think about it, there might be something that you're physically limited from doing. But you might be able to accomplish at least part of that the way that you set out to do. But I'm going to tell you something right now, and I know this. If you tell yourself you can't do it, you won't. If you tell yourself you can't do it, you won't do it. As long as you think everything's negative, it'll always be negative. It will always be negative. As long as you think that you can't, then you won't. As long as you think lustful thoughts that are strong, that you think these lustful thoughts are stronger than you can be, then they're going to be. As long as you think that you can't win, then you won't win. We're defeated before we even get started. We have allowed our thoughts to take us captive. And when our thoughts take us captive, we lose confidence in ourselves and God, which in turn leads to losing our life the way God intends for us to live it. Now, I want to jump ahead really quick, just really quick, and I want to jump ahead to chapter 14, because it gets pretty cool in chapter 14. And in verse 36 and 38, you know, think about, I want you to just think about this. These men, so the men Moses, this is verse 36, so the men Moses had sent to explore the land, who returned and made the whole community grumble against him, okay, by spreading a bad report. These men, in verse 37, who were responsible for spreading the bad report of the bad thoughts about the land, were struck down and died of a plague before the Lord. Of the men who went to explore the land, only Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of however you pronounce that name, survived. This is huge. This is so big. Their doubt, their negative thoughts caused their death. You say, well, Pastor Ron, are you telling me? No, I'm not telling you. But this is what it did do. Their negative thoughts stopped them from experiencing a wonderful promise that God had already given them. God had already given them that land. It was theirs. All they had to do was act on it accordingly. All they had to do was take their thoughts captive, even in the face of big mountains and big giants. And it was theirs. That promise was theirs. But they never got to experience it. So why did Joseph and Caleb get to live and experience all of this? Very simple. They chose to take their thoughts captive because I said earlier, they saw these two men, these two spies saw the same exact things that the other ten did. They saw the good land, the good fruit. They saw the mountains. They saw the towns. They saw the giants. They saw what they appeared to be big, strong men, but their attitude was different. And it says in chapter 14, this is their account, and starting in verse 5, then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of that name, who were among those who had explored the land. And they tore their clothes. This meant they were passionate. They'd been listening to this grumbling and listening to all these negative thoughts, and they tore their clothes. This was just like, wait a minute. Okay, they went all Hulk Hogan on them there for just a second. Okay, and they tore them and ripped their clothes. And they said this, okay, and said to the entire Israelite assembly, the land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. Man, this is awesome land. And if the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid. Listen, they stood up. They saw the giants. They didn't care. They didn't care how big they were and how small that they were. They saw all of that stuff. But they knew that God was with them. They knew that God had already given it to them, and they were ready to go take possession of it. They had taken their thoughts captive, and they stuck to it. And they were the only two that got to experience that promise that God had given. Listen, I know circumstances are real. I know they are. I know struggles in our mind are real. I know it's easy to dwell. And I want to really focus on that word for just a second. Dwelling, setting up camp, pitching your tent in that thought. It's tough. If you're going to pitch a tent somewhere, pitch a tent with God. The Bible actually talks about thinking about things that are godly. And listen, I know Satan attacks our mind. He attacks it hard, full force, 100%. He goes at it with everything that he can go at it with. This is a battle. And this is one that I know that probably all of us struggle with from time to time. But it's a battle that we can begin to fight in the right way. It doesn't mean Satan's going to stop attacking your mind. If you struggle with prideful thoughts, it doesn't mean that he's not going to come at you with a prideful dart. If it's lustful thoughts, it doesn't mean that he's not going to try to sting you and make you think of something. By the way, that's what makes things like pornography so bad. And the reason why, once you see an image, it becomes implanted. And you may live for 10 years and never think about it, never look at it again, and it never visualize itself in your mind. But out of the blue, someday Satan will remember that little spot, and he'll take one of his little fiery darts, and he'll go, and instantaneously, guys, you know what I'm talking about. Instantaneously, that vision will be right there, and you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Maybe it's not that. Maybe it's another kind of thought, and you're just going along, and everything's really great. And maybe it was this. Spouses, let's talk about this for a second, because, you know, this is really cool. And this happens. Maybe your spouse did something, or maybe you did something to your spouse at some particular point in time in your relationship, and maybe it happened a long time ago. But there's just something down inside of that, and that thought is just like you haven't taken that one captive. It still has a little bit of a tie. Maybe it's just around a finger. But everything will be going along really great, and then Satan will take one of them darts and ding. And it instantly ignites this, well, who does he think he is? Kind of like Tim Hawkins. Are those yours on the floor? And then the littlest thing becomes the biggest explosion. Because we have yet to take that thought captive. I'm not saying it makes what you said or what your spouse did right or wrong. That's not what I'm saying. That kind of goes on to another message about forgiveness. If we truly say we forgive somebody, then we better live that forgiveness. Because if we don't, it's never been given. Lustful thoughts, selfish thoughts, bad attitudes, prideful thoughts, negative thoughts. God's given you a way out. He has given you the power to take those thoughts captive. He has given you the power to look at your mountain and say, throw yourself in the sea if you'll just believe it. If you'll just believe it. Now, that means you're still going to have to fight. It doesn't mean that it's probably going to be a Candyland experience from here on out. You'll still get stuck in the goo every once in a while. I don't know why Candyland just popped into my mind. Thoughts! You used to play that game all the time. Some of you are like, what's Candyland? Is that Sugar Crush? Yeah. No, it's not. That's a whole other message, too, about addictions. Did you catch that? Yeah. Go back to 2 Corinthians 10:4-5 real quick. The weapons we fight with are not the weapons of the world. They're not physical. Your battles, your toughest battles, won't be fought with your hands. Your toughest battles will be fought with your heart and with your mind. On the contrary, they have divine power to demolish strongholds, and they do. When God lives in your heart, when Jesus is here, okay, when he is here, you have power. The Bible talks about it being the same power that conquered the grave. He becomes the strength, the cornerstone, and the foundation of everything that happens in your life, every thought that comes into your head, every moment of your life. And we demolish arguments and strongholds. Or we demolish arguments and every pretension. We demolish things before they even happen. Before they even happen. And we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Jesus. You can see the negative and the positive in any situation in life. But it's our choice what we dwell on. It's our choice where we pitch our tent. It's our choice where we decide to live. And we have the ability to take our thoughts captive and experience the life that God has promised us. Every head bowed and every eye closed this morning. God, thank you for your word. God, it's challenging. This is hard. God, it's hard. Our mind is so vulnerable. Our thoughts just, and God, sometimes they just, we lose them before. God, I know that you want us to think on good things. I know that you want us to control our thoughts, to keep them in check. God, it begins with you, trusting you, believing you, not doubting you. Realizing, God, that maybe sometimes you use others to help us. God, most importantly, God, I think it almost begins inside of ourselves and the choice that we make. God, I know it's a battle, I know it's a fight, and I know it's a journey. But it's one worth fighting, and it's a journey worth taking, because it leads to you, and it leads to a promise. It leads to a promise that you have given us in your word, that if anyone would believe in you, anyone would believe in you and give their life to you, that we would not die. But we would live forever with you. That is an amazing promise and an amazing reason to live. So God, today speak to us. Begin, God, to search our hearts. And God, if this morning, if we need to pray the same prayer that David prayed, create in me, God, a clean heart and renew a right spirit in me. And God, if that needs to happen today, God, then I just pray, God, that you begin to speak that and begin to change, God, people's hearts. And God, if it's in our minds, maybe it hasn't made it to our hearts yet. Maybe the battle's still right there, God, and it's just really, and God, sometimes that's even worse when it's stuck there. God, I pray for clarity and a determination and a desire, God, to take thoughts captive. In Jesus' name, with every hand.